Despite the Nonsense. As live as they want to be from California, here's Sean and Jen.
Quasars, we got them.
Quasars?
Quasars, bitches.
Did you see that on Cosmos? Is that how Neil deGrasse Tyson phrased it?
We got more quasars.
I don't think he did.
We got more quasars than any podcast on the block. Proven. By science. Welcome to Hyper Nonsense. We're the podcast that comes to you straight from the heart of California. And I'm sitting here watching our recording software draw the wonderful waves of sound onto the digital canvas of life. And I feel like normally we have bigger waves. And I'm trying to not freak out and obsess over that.
Oh, clearly you're already obsessing over that if you're starting off the show with it. Yeah.
I could be wrong. I might be getting confused with the actual end product WAVs because
they look different.
One of the nice things about Reaper, which is our software, is when you export a file, it actually shows you the WAVs that are going to be in the finished product. And a lot of these audio programs don't do that. So.
Well, I know when I've recorded other shows with Reaper or using Reaper, it looks like I've got tiny little waves, you know?
Yeah.
But then by the time it gets to you, I don't think it necessarily looks that way.
Yeah. All right.
So,
well,
it's fine.
I guess we'll figure it out afterwards because we can't do live audio troubleshooting and record the show. So much to talk about. I do want to say this, if we could have just a tiny bit of self-congratulationism. We're on episode 24, which means that we've technically done 6 months worth of shows.
Wow.
And for the most part, we've done them on a weekly basis. So I will say that we're at least sticking to it.
We're trying. We even had a show put together when we weren't here to do a
That's
show.
That's right. Yeah. We even had a show that went out when we were not even here. Robots put it together.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of science. So there's so much to talk about. But the first thing I want to cover is I've had some run-ins lately with, as I described it in our show notes, crazy people. And I've told Jen some of these stories. I try to save them when I can for the show, but she doesn't know at the very least the last one. And, you know, I don't really follow astrology, etc. I don't know if Endor is in the ninth house of Vulcan or if Mercury is
if
in retrograde
what?
Or if other things are happening. But lately, it just seems like there's kind of energy about people and the world when I go outside. And I know that some of this is because
it's
of
holiday crap.
The fact that we're going into the holiday
that's
season.
That's what it is. People lose their minds around this time.
But I don't know if that's all of it, but I do want to relate these stories. So the first one happened to me probably about a month or so ago. And I was getting on the bus here, and the way that our local city buses are laid out is they kind of have two sections. And to get into the back of the bus, you usually have to go up a couple of steps. And I was doing that because my policy for bus riding is, if I can, I try to sit towards the back of the bus, so the seats in the front can be used by people that have lesser mobility than I do. That's just, you know.
Well, it seems reasonable, you know.
Right. and I noticed that the very back seat of the bus was open, and when I can, I try to sit back there. So I'm going up these steps towards the back of the bus, and I feel this boom right here, like right below sort of my, or right on, or maybe right below my right clavicle. I just feel the sound of someone essentially hitting me, and it felt like kind of with a closed fist, but like the bottom of it. So at first I was completely thrown off by that because I didn't even process it, and I just kept walking, and I went, well, wait a minute, something just hit me, and I don't know what it was, and I turn around, and right where, you know, right from the vicinity of anywhere that could have actually hit me, there's a guy sitting there in a seat, and I think when I was going up the steps, he might have been in the process of sitting down. So I don't know if he just randomly bumped me or if he intentionally hit me. I feel like it was more intentional because of how the sensation felt and where I got hit. But I don't know for sure. I mean, he might have been, you know, turning around or sitting down and just something.
He could have been taking his jacket off, moved his arm out, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but it was weird. And I stopped and I turned around and I looked at the guy because my first thought was, well, maybe it's somebody that I know who recognizes me and they were trying to get my attention. And I turn around and, of course, I don't see real well. Now, I wasn't that far away from the guy. But I didn't immediately recognize him. And I just kind of sat there for a second. I looked at him and he was looking back at me and I went, hi. And I went and I sat down, figuring that if it was someone I knew,
they'd say hi back and start talking to you.
Right. And then I might recognize them from their voice, because that happens to me a lot in public, where someone will say hello to me and I may not see them well enough to recognize who they are, but I can usually tell from their voice. Now, I've had a few instances in my life where that hasn't been true and someone recognized me and I didn't know who they were. And I mean, this was like, I'm going back years. I'm not trying to insinuate that I have any modicum of fame and people are recognizing me in the street, because I can assure you that's not what's happening.
Right. But like, this is kind of a small town, you know? I mean, yeah. It's not big. It's not a city or anything right. like that. And you do run into people, you know,
sure.
every so often when
sure.
you go,
it's normal.
You know, you go around town. So it's possible that one of the people you've run into before may have been on the bus, you know?
Yeah. So I go and I sit down, and this guy isn't really, he is not saying anything to me. He doesn't seem to be paying attention to me. You know, I got my headphones on. I'm listening to the pods. I sit down and pull up my iPad and just, it's fine. You know, I wasn't, whatever happened as far as me being hit or bumped was not enough to injure me. So I don't care. It's not worth even giving a second thought to. And I think what happened, based on following events, is that maybe this guy really wanted me to sit down next to him and he was trying to get my attention. I don't know, because before I'd gotten on the bus, there was a guy sitting across from him. And this guy, who I'm just going to simply refer to as the crazy guy, he starts talking to this other guy who was already on the bus. And the other guy, it was a young guy, you know, a college age kid, probably early 20s. He was got a phone in his hand, you know, doing stuff with his phone. And after the bus leaves, I can hear the crazy guy saying to the young guy, oh, hey, you know, how are you? And he's trying to strike up a conversation. And crazy guy goes, yeah, you know, I'm not racist or anything, but I've really noticed, and now the young guy is, you know, he's darker complected than a white person. I'm thinking he's probably of Indian heritage, maybe Hispanic, doesn't matter. But my point is saying is that from...
Is that the crazy guy started his conversation with, I'm not racist, but?
Yes.
Is that, oh, no.
And,
nothing good is going to come from that.
And he goes, but... You know, what's happening in America is people are becoming a minority.
Oh, no.
And
this was like, this wasn't just a couple days ago that this occurred, right?
Oh, no. This was about a month ago.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And I'm sitting here going, oh, man, this is at the very least, this is incredibly awkward.
Yeah. I mean, if you are a white person and you have come to the conclusion that white people are becoming a minority, if you're not racist, you don't give a fuck.
And
you especially don't bring it up with strangers on the bus.
I will. You know? Yeah, I will say to the crazy guy's credit, after that, he said something, you know, to the effect of, like, white. I've noticed white people are becoming a minority, and you know, there's nothing you can do about it. And I think it's going to be okay. He said something like that. So at least...
Okay, so it didn't go as badly as it could have been. Yeah. But that's an odd thing to bring up on a bus with a stranger who's like random, who doesn't know you, who's like looking at his phone and not signaling, hey, I'd like to talk to you now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a couple stops down, another guy gets on the bus, another young guy.
Well, it's a college town. There's going to be a lot of young guys.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And he's coming to the back of the bus as well. And he passes the crazy guy. Crazy guy tries to get his attention. This guy turns around. And crazy guy does the padding of the seat thing, you know, with his hand.
Like, here, sit here.
Like, hey, come sit next to me. And I can tell from their exchange that these aren't two people that really know each other before. So he's just trying to get somebody to come sit by him. And, you know, he starts talking to him, and I don't even remember what it's about, but this is, again, another young guy, you know, darker in complexion, again, possibly Indian, Hispanic, don't know, doesn't really matter, but it was just weird, and I was kind of sitting there on the bus figuring, well, I'm going to have to walk past this guy when I get off. I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. And nothing did.
Okay, good.
I was really hoping that he would get off the bus before me, but he didn't, so.
I wonder how long he's been on that bus trying to talk to young men.
I don't know. It was, I think, fairly random. I don't really, or did not recognize the guy. I don't necessarily think I've seen him again, and I, you know, ride the same buses, and when you ride the same buses, you tend to run into a lot of the same people. Whatever the case, it was over. You know, I got off the bus. He didn't try to talk to me or hit me again or whatever. And again, it wasn't really a huge deal. Now, the second story, this only happened to me about 2 weeks ago, roughly. I was in downtown San Luis Obispo. And I had about a half hour to burn before I was really able to catch a bus back. And the day before, you and I had gone grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I forgot to get at the store was a simple can of black beans. And I thought, I've got about 30 minutes to kill. I bet I can walk over to the Albertsons, which has a bus stop right next to it, and pick up a can of black beans and get on the bus. I'll have enough time. So I'm walking and I kind of go a bit of a, I don't know. I was using more of kind of, for lack of a better term, I don't want to say side streets because there really aren't any, but I just went a little bit of a different way than I might normally have. It doesn't really make any difference, but I'm going down this one street toward, in the direction of Albertsons, and a person is walking, you know, towards me, opposite direction of me, and she stops and she goes, hey, can I have a dollar to buy some water? And
that's kind of an odd thing. Where can you get water for a dollar?
And I thought,
you know?
Well,
that's kind of odd.
You know, and I just happened to have, I knew that I had a few loose dollar bills in my pocket. And I don't know, I was in a good mood. And one of the reasons why I tend to not give money to panhandlers is that I usually have all my money in a money clip.
And you don't want to, like, you
I
know,
can't, I'm not going to pull
you don't
my money.
Pull all the money you own, you have on you
right
out
someone's,
for everyone to see, you know?
Exactly.
Not cool.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I had a few loose dollar bills and I could just reach into my pocket and grab one. So I grabbed it. I gave it to her, and she goes, oh, hey, thanks. What's your name?
Oh, no.
I said, my name's Sean.
Oh, no.
And she said, well, what are you? And I started walking, you know, in the direction I needed to go. Because, again, I was kind of on a limited time. I didn't have a lot of time to
catch a bus. So you had, exactly. You know, you had to catch the bus.
And she says, oh, well, where are you going? I said, well, I need to go to Albertson's to pick up something. And then I need to catch a bus. And she goes, oh, that's where I'm going too.
Oh, like, great. Just wonderful. What you wanted to hear.
So we're kind of walking sort of together. We walk a grand total of maybe a block. And she goes, yeah, I needed money because my parents stole my food stamps card.
There's a sentence for you.
And I just went, at this point I've got to roll with it. I'm not going to ask too many questions. I just said, well, that's terrible. Why would they do that? And she said, well, they have a tendency to favor their male offspring more than me. And I, okay.
That's a strange statement too.
And I said, yeah, that's really bad. And she goes, yeah, they're like the people that, you know, when they walk into a room, you can just feel all the energy just go out of the room. They're like energy, you know, they just take anything good immediately out of the room as soon as they walk in. I said, wow, that's really bad. I'm sorry about that. And at this point, we sort of get to there's a couple of entrances from the street we're on to go into the shopping center where Albertsons is. My plan was to go in the first one and kind of walk up around the side of the building. There's other businesses there. Walk up around the side of the building, go to the front, go up to Albertsons. And I can tell that when I'm at that point to essentially turn right, she wants to keep going straight. And I don't necessarily care that she wants to talk to me, but I can't just waste time. And I'm afraid that what's going to happen is if I stick with her, I'm going to get kind of stuck into a place where she's going to, I don't want to say entrap me, but her need to talk to me is going to keep me from being able to get to where I need to go. So at that point, I start turning off and I go, well, I got to go over here now. You know, have a good day. Good luck. And I go off into the first entrance to Albertsons. I you know, the shopping center. I go into the store. And I'm having a hell of a time finding black beans. I'm going up and down every aisle. And I actually ran into her again. So she went her own way to get to Albertsons, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And I just happened to realize it's her. And she's looking down. And it's almost like the way she's looking down and the way she's walking, I feel like she's essentially counting her steps or counting, you know,
counting the
cracks
in
the tiles
or
whatever.
Maybe. I don't know.
And I just realize it's her. And I say, hi. And I just keep walking. Because, again, I don't have a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep going up and down the aisles. And finally, I find a can of black beans. Now, before I even ran into her, I was feeling thirsty. And I figured, okay, well, I'm going to get, speaking of which, a bottle of water while I'm in there. And I go over to, you know, I find in the front of the store, they've got an open front cooler that's got bottles of water in there. And the first thing I notice is none of them are under a dollar.
So, okay, maybe she had a little bit of money. I don't know.
You know, not a big deal. Mm-hmm. Not a big deal. Not here to judge. And I find, of what's available, the least expensive bottle of water.
And you already found the black beans?
And I'd already found the black beans. So I go, I pay, I leave. And at this point, I'm debating on a couple of choices. Now that I know she's still hanging around, I'm like, okay, do I want to run into her again? What is that going to mean if I do? And I'm kind of judging in my head, is there any way that she can possibly make me miss my bus? Probably not. And then my other thing going around in my mind is, how stable or unstable is this person? Would she say, get on the bus with me, follow me home? I don't really think that's going to happen. I really don't think it's going to happen. But I had an opportunity because of the timing that if I wanted to, I could have walked way back almost to the other end of downtown and caught a different bus. And I went, you know what? I'm not going to operate from a place of fear. I'm just going to walk out to the side here at Albertsons, and I'm going to wait for my bus. And I get out there, and I've got maybe 5-10 minutes to wait. I pull out my iPad. I'm checking my email, checking my Words with Friends or whatever. And it's getting kind of dark at this point. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this person come by from my right-hand side. And I realize it's her. And she goes, hey. And she holds out her hand. Here's your change. And I just reflexively, I put my hand out. Mm-hmm. And she gives me a handful of coins. And I said, thanks. You can keep this if you need it. And she just walks on. Just not well, another
that's,
word.
That's different.
And I'm going, you know, this is the first time in my life I've ever been panhandled and given change. And she gave me 82 cents. So how in the hell she took
strange.
My dollar and I couldn't see. It looked like she had a bag, so she must have bought something. But how in the hell she took my dollar and bought anything? I mean, she took my dollar and gave me back 82 cents. So that means that in theory, she spent at least 18 cents while she was in Albertsons. And I can only assume, because I don't know of anything you can only buy for 18 cents. I can't think of anything.
I can't
including
think of
tax,
anything either. Yeah.
Including tax. I
That's
can't think
weird.
Of anything. And so she obviously must have had some other money or something. I don't know. It was.
And it's a random amount to give you, too. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Cents.
82 cents. That's like, okay, sure. That's weird.
So there's that. Now, the most recent one is just a few days ago. We're recording this on the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So this happened actually the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, speaking of holiday insanity.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I happen to be in downtown San Luis Obispo. And I've got about a half hour, give or take. I had gone down to have some lunch. I had some lunch. And I had some time. And I wanted to bring something home for you. The place where I had chosen to eat was not really a place that you could eat. So I thought, okay, I'm going to walk up to Splash Cafe, get a sandwich because they have the gluten-free bread. Get you a sandwich. Come back, get on the bus, and I figured I have enough time for that. But again, I'm not just loping along at a tourist's pace. You know, I have a certain amount of time, and I want to make use of it. So I'm kind of moving. You know, no one would ever really describe me as someone who really quote unquote walks fast. You know, like I kind of have a pace I can move at when I need to, but I see plenty of other people that even when I'm moving at what I think is my fast pace, they move faster than me. There have been plenty of times when I've, you know, walked up the bike path here, moving at, again, what I think is a reasonable clip, and, you know, some 62-year-old guy just walks right by me.
Well, some of these 62-year-old guys out here have been runners, you know, people that get up in the morning and run for however long they run, you know, so it's possible that he's just very fit.
But my point is to say my fast walking pace is probably eclipsed by many people out there, but I'm moving at a certain clip. And I had just crossed the street, and I'm going in front of the Apple store, purely coincidental. There's two guys who are together, and by that I mean they're walking together. I don't believe that they're, you know, a couple or anything. And one guy's got a little dog on a leash, totally not usual to see around here.
That's totally normal.
And they've got that kind of homeless / transient vibe about them.
Which is not unusual.
Not unusual for around here. Now, I have worked something out, because now that we've lived here, officially lived in San Luis for, you know, 8+ years. I realize that the, for lack of a better term, permanent homeless, people that have been homeless for as long as we've lived here, they've come to realize that it's really hard to live like that with a pet. So most of the homeless people that I see with pets, I always assume they're transients and they haven't given up on the, they haven't accepted the fact that living that way and supporting a pet is a difficult thing to do. Because, again, all of the people I see here all the time that are homeless, they don't
there's
have
a few.
Pets.
Yeah, there's a few that when I started, you know, when we moved here and I started working at the bookstore here, there were people that were obviously, you know, they were homeless and they remained that way the entire time I worked there, all those years. And I still see them walking around the same way now.
And, you know, it's not meant to be a judgment. It's just a
It's simply there are some that have been homeless for years for whatever reason.
So these two guys are walking, you know, essentially towards me. And I'm kind of in a hurry, and I move, you know, I move to my right to go around them, and this is me, okay? I don't look for trouble. This is not my MO, okay?
No, you don't.
You know, I go to my right to move around them, and I'm telling you, I'm around them, okay? They're not. I'm not going to, at this point, Even with as bad as my eyesight may be, and there was still, this was in the middle of the day, so it wasn't dark, I'm not going to run into these guys, right? So there's two guys, and the guy to my left, the one that I'm trying to pass, what he does is he leans out to his left. He leans, okay?
Is he seated or is he standing?
No, these guys are walking.
Oh, they're walking, okay.
Yeah. He leans to his left, and he kind of, like, clips me with his left shoulder. So we kind of brush shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was like it was more than just this. You know, it was more than just we kind of scraped. He clipped me, you know, like that.
Great.
On my left, with his you know, our left shoulders. He clipped me like that. And I just kept walking. Now, I wasn't injured. It didn't hurt. And I just kept walking. Because I'm like, I don't understand what this is about, but I don't need it, and I really don't care. So I just kept walking, and I hear from behind me, "Hey!
Oh, no.
The last guy that didn't say excuse me, we got in a fight."
Oh, good. So he's an asshole, too. I should start going with you.
So I'm like, I don't need any of this. And he intentionally leaned into me. Like,
right.
I know.
Like, he's out to pick a fight. That's what his motive is today.
What happened.
Nothing better to do.
Right?
Yeah.
So I just keep walking. And then I hear, "Hey, fat guy."
Oh, my God. Do you want me to start going with you?
I just keep walking, and I'm about ready to turn a corner to go to Splash Cafe, and I'm turning the corner, and I hear, "Fuck you!"
Oh, my God.
Now,
what the hell's wrong with these people?
So I go to Splash, I order the sandwich, I'm there for max 10 minutes, and I'm sitting there going, all right, once again, I would prefer not to run into this person again. So what's my best strategy for that? I knew the direction that they were headed. I can kind of size up the fact that they're transients, because my first thought was, well, shit, if these guys are homeless, they're probably looking to get on the same bus as me.
Was there a security guy right in that area? Sometimes there is.
There might have been,
right,
but it doesn't.
Right there.
Yeah, there might have been, but it doesn't really make any difference. They were walking, so I knew they were just going to keep going, and I thought, well, wait a minute. They've got a dog, clearly not a service dog, so in theory, they're not allowed to take that dog on the bus. And again,
right,
I went, all right, I'm not going to operate from a place of fear. And I kind of mapped out in my head, okay, they were heading this direction on Higuera Street, which is a way that if I wanted to, I could have gone. So instead, I just went another direction. Instead of going the direction they went, I just went north instead. And it didn't have any, it didn't cause me to have to go out of my way. It's two different ways to achieve the same end goal. And I didn't run into him, but I was just kind of nervous, and I'm like looking around, and I get to the bus stop, and I see a guy who I think might be the guy. I'm not entirely sure, because again, I don't see real well. But I realized, no, it wasn't him, and nobody said anything to me, and overall, it was fine. But it was just weird, and if my assumption is correct, and the guy is a transient, he's probably already gone. You know, he's on his way to whatever shithole he came from, or to somewhere else, for whatever.
Or but, probably jail if he keeps up with what he's doing.
Well, yeah, if he keeps up. That's yeah, he'll be. If his intent is
to pick fights with strangers perpetually, somebody's going to turn him in. Somebody's mm-hmm. going to call the police. They're going to catch him. How hard is it to find two guys walking around with the dog in that same area? You know, this town ain't that big, as I said. So that's where they're going to end up. It's just a matter of, you know, exactly when that happens.
But this is the thing, right? Like, I'm not an aggressive person. And if it hadn't been blatantly obvious that the guy leaned into me, I would have said, excuse me, I'm sorry.
But see, here's the thing, though. If you said that, he would still pick a fight with you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what he wanted.
He is looking for a fight.
Yeah, he wanted... He didn't get it.
That's why he was yelling. He was mad. Right. He didn't get what he wanted.
Right. He did not... Instead of even getting an acknowledgement of the fact... Of getting that satisfaction of... He knew what he did, but me apologizing to him, he got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I completely ignored him.
And that's what a lot of those people hate. They're desperate for whatever kind of attention, whatever negative attention they're seeking. And when they don't get it, they just fall out.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't... This is the part that I'm most happy about, because I almost did. I didn't even look back. That's the part, now that I think about it, that I'm really satisfied about. Because I had a point...
Because it's like he didn't exist to you.
Because I had a point where I really thought when I heard him the first time. Because I've come to a point now, after just living for as long as I have in the world, that when I'm out in public and people are essentially behaving badly or just being strange or weird, I try to not acknowledge them because it's going to draw me into their shitstorm.
And pretty much.
I don't need it. It's not going to help me, and I don't have the resources generally to help them. So it sounds like I'm kind of being... uncaring or whatever, but it's just a matter of survival.
You have people try to pick a fight with you. You have no obligation to care about them.
Well, that's true, but I mean, just in general, you know, I don't, when I go out in public, I'm very kind of, you know, I got my headphones on. I'm very, I don't want to say withdrawn, but it's not, you know, and I'm happy to talk to people. And that happens too, where, you know, I have nice conversations with people, or I stop and I give people time. As I've said many times before, I get asked for directions a lot, and I'm more than happy to give people directions whenever I can, even crazy people sometimes, because sometimes they need directions. But this kind of stuff is just more than anybody needs. And I was in a mood where... In a way, I might have been, I don't want to say attracting that, but I was in also, you know, we talked on our last show about how I had that weird kind of caffeine overload and I was really tense and anxious and you were feeling it. And then mm-hmm. I had a, you know, migraine headache and all that. Well, you know, I had only been a few days at that point, you know, cutting back on the caffeine, though I had had some, but I haven't had any. I've had no caffeine coffee since that incident. I've had some tea and I have had some soda, but I haven't had any caffeine coffee, no espresso.
Right. Maybe espresso's not for you.
So anyway, I still had, and just with everything going on with me trying to, you know, our financial situation, me trying to find work, And then there was other shit that happened that day, which we haven't even talked about yet. And it's like, I definitely probably had a bit of an energy about me that people who think they're tough shit and are kind of more naturally aggressive, you know, they can probably pick up on that a little bit. So there's that, but ultimately, and I'm just so glad that I completely walked away and ignored the guy. So
okay, so from here until the crazy season's over, I will go with you.
Well,
because I will ward off all that.
Yeah,
shit,
that's fine. I mean, that's fine. But
and then you won't have to put up with it.
That, you know, that's fine.
Because I'm telling you, if I was there, they would have security on their asses real fucking quick. Yeah. I could draw them a freaking picture of the dudes, you know, like literally I can.
Well, and the thing is that ultimately nothing really happened. I mean, the guy leaned into me a little
bit. See, no, not nothing really happened. You've been talking about this. It's obviously upset you because you're human, you know, and he's not just going to stop because you didn't engage. He's going to go look for others. Yeah. Other shit was happening. I would have turned his ass in so damn fast.
This is kind of what I mean by nothing happened, because okay, something happened, but the thing is that, you know, the guy would,
you know,
the guy,
easy it would be for security to kick his ass out because he's obviously a transient.
Well, here's the thing,
he'd be done. He'd be out of there.
Here's the thing, okay, those guys were leaving that area that those security guards work.
They're not the only ones.
So you know,
they're not the only security, and you can get the police.
The only thing that was going to make a difference would have been to actually call the police, and there would have been, no, there's nothing the police would have done. I mean, was I going to press charges against the guy?
You can file a report.
No, it's just not worth it.
You can file a report, and then they have paperwork on those guys. So the next time they harass somebody, they've got paperwork. Oh, hey, look, he harassed this other person, too.
If I had gone back, if I'd run into those guys again, and that guy was really on my case, then yeah, I would have gone to the cops. But anyway,
shit, I'd have had him. That's it. There's no reason to go walking through town starting shit like that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I agree.
No way. Two guys and a dog. Then you don't know if they're going to sick on you or not. You know? Screw that. And they'd have been gone. I would have pitched the biggest fit ever, and you know I can, to make that happen.
Well, let's mention this real quick, because it is part of, you know, it sort of ties into the events of that day and why I was maybe a little more edgier than normal, despite the lack of espresso in my bloodstream. But on Tuesday of I guess technically now it's last week, I had written an article. Jen and I both contribute to this website called Podcaster News.
Yeah, I do interviews with women in podcasting. That's what I do.
And I'd written an article about this thing that's been making the rounds in podcasting. There's a big company called Podcast One, and they're having a bit of a dust-up with Stitcher. And Stitcher is a podcast aggregator app thing.
And some of you might be listening to us on it.
You may actually be listening to us right now on Stitcher, because we don't have a problem with Stitcher. But Podcast One and Stitcher are having a bit of a dust up right now. And I wrote an article about it on Tuesday. And out of the middle of nowhere on Wednesday, I get emailed by a PR person, assistant to, somehow related to, the CEO of Podcast One. He would like to, he wants to talk to me to kind of clear up any questions about the whole situation, because I just wrote the article based on whatever, you know, news had been released up to that point. And, this kind of thing doesn't happen to me too often. So I'm like, freaking out, going, oh shit, you know, this is I got a chance for, you know, an actual scoop here. This doesn't happen to me.
Yeah, that doesn't
often
happen. I don't think I've ever had anything
and
like
that was
happen,
it like
my writing is not generally of that type.
That was at like 11 a.m. on Wednesday, and I was already kind of fixing to go out and have something to eat, because I kind of had a whole plan for the day of things that I needed to get done or wanted to work on. And I start panicking and going, well, I got to take this shot. And I start drawing up a list of questions, kind of asking some other people I know who are at least remotely familiar with the situation. But I don't want to leave them hanging. I don't want to email them back at, you know, 4 p.m. So about a half hour later, I email the assistant guy back and I say, my schedule's flexible. Let me know when you're ready. He emails me back and he says, we're ready. We can call you right now.
And wow. I'm
like, oh, shit.
So there you are. Mm-hmm.
So I get all my recording equipment together because I have a couple ideas of what I might be able to do with this interview. And I kind of had my A game set up and my B game set up, and I didn't even get a chance to try my A game set up because they called me on my house phone, so I had to improvise a little bit. And within seconds, you know, I'm talking to Norm Pattis, the CEO of Podcast One, also a higher up, CEO, chairman of, I don't know, Westwood One, the big radio syndication company, you know, responsible for Loveline, all these other shows that, you know, you may have heard of. And I am, like, nervous as shit. So I talked to him for about a half hour, and it was a really good interview. He gave me some fucking bombs. And I'm kind of walking away from my computer going, what the hell just happened? Like, I did not wake up today thinking I was going to get a chance to talk to him. So,
and there you are.
So there it was. And I'll link to that in the show notes. If you want to go find it, you can. But it was another thing that just kind of put me on edge. And the whole time I'm thinking about, okay, I got to, you know, I want to make sure I edit this and make it sound real good and get it out in a reasonable amount of time. So that was part of the whole thing. Anyway, enough about that. We got too many things to talk about.
We have a lot of things to talk about. Yeah, but so, seriously, I will go with you until the crazy season's over because this is not going to happen again. You know?
Yeah.
I will ward that off.
Well, I trust that you will. Uh-huh. So do you want to talk about what happened in your, what's going on in your arm right now?
Yeah. Okay. So I use a birth control that at the time I started using, it was called Implanon. It's the size of a matchstick. It goes under the skin in your arm. It lasts 3 years and you're good to go. You're not going to get pregnant. It's like such a slight possible chance that it's less, it's like 99.9% effective, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I'd used it for 3 years and then you have to get it taken out. Well, I went to Planned Parenthood in town to get it put in. So I thought, well, it makes sense to go there to get it taken out. And I have, I'm on Medicaid now because we make so much money. Right. I qualify. Yeah. And they are actually, Planned Parenthood is one of the doctors that's on their plan, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, so I can go. So I go. And I, you know, I make an appointment and say, this is what I need. And they reschedule me twice because they ran out of Implanon. I think I talked about that a little bit, you know. And so finally I go in. So I go in to get it and I get the same doctor and she's great. She's wonderful. Actually, I don't know if she's technically a doctor or if she's like a nurse or I don't know, something different. But she's awesome, you know. So she goes and takes the old one out of my arm, which is not pleasant. They do, like, you know, they numb you up so you don't feel it, but they have to, like, sort of press on your arm in order to get the old one out, and you do feel that pressure. So that was new. And then they went to put the second one in, and now it's called Nexplanon, because not because the drug is different or anything about it is different, but the device they use to actually put it in your arm is different than the first one. So it's the Nexplanon,
yeah,
because of the device. And I guess there's rules, you know, governing that, but that's what it is now. And so it used to be, it was a little syringe and they'd sort of stick it under your skin with this syringe that didn't involve a needle. You know, they have to cut open your arm a little bit and they tell you, oh, you might have a scar. Okay, I don't care, you know, and they put it in. But the problem was that some people administering it were doing it wrong and tilting that syringe and putting the thing sort of intramuscularly, which is not ideal. So they built this other thing in order to make it impossible for you to do anything but put it in directly, you know, the way it's supposed to be, right under the skin on your arm. So I had that done. And this spawns other, you know, hey, you should also get this and this done because of my age and being female. I'm like, oh, goody, you know. obviously not that day, but it's like, you should make appointments for this and that. Yeah, yeah, okay, fine. We'll get to that some other day, you know? So I go, and how this works is you get a pressure bandage on your arm, which is like gauze and wrapped really tightly. And before you put the pressure bandage on, you have three little, I think she called them like butterfly bandages or something, that are supposed to hold the incision closed. Okay. So you have the little bandages, you have the big bandages. You leave the big bandage on for 24 hours, and you can take that off. And then you leave the little ones on for 3 days total, and you can take that off. And last time I did that, and everything was fine. This time I go to take the little bandages off, and that wound is still open. And I'm going, well, this is not a good thing, you know? Right. And I'm going, okay, well, you know, why is this happening? And I know I was real super careful with my arm so as not to cause any, you know, problems. I followed all the directions. You know, you can't get your arm wet while the bandages are on those 3 days. I didn't do that. You know, I'm going, what's happening here? You know? And my conclusion at the time was, well, I'm older. I'm 3 years older than I was when I got the first one, you know, so maybe I heal differently. And one of our birds died. And I was grieving, and it's like physical. This bird was 23 years old. I've had her my whole 22. Adult, 22 years old. I've had her my entire adult life. You know, this is the bird that was my baby. And so I'm still kind of messed up about that. And this was closer to when that happened. And, I thought maybe I'm not healing because of all these factors, you know, plus we'd just gone to BlizzCon. So maybe my body's like dealing with all of the con crud and fighting that. Maybe that's why I'm not healing. Maybe this is me. Right. So, of course, the bandages got taken off on a Friday night, like you're supposed to, and there's nothing I could do. So she gave me other bandages. I put the, you know, other bandages on, and figuring, okay, Saturday I'm going to call and go back in. You know, website says they're open on Saturdays. You know, maybe they could just take a look and see how this is, you know. I'm not in pain or anything, but I don't really want an open, you know, my arm now has a socket, you know. Yeah. I mean, like if it were a weapon in D3, it has a socket now.
You could add a gem to it.
Really, how about the one for vitality? I think that would work great for me. So anyway, so we call the next day, and I get a switchboard, essentially, a call center. And I'm trying to explain the situation, not understanding that this is a call center. It becomes obvious a little later on. And they're like, well, which one did you go to? I'm like, well, the one here in town. And they're like, well, they're not open today. And that's when I figured, oh, I'm talking to a call center. Okay, I get it. And they want to send me to one that's like way far away from here, you know? And they're like, well, you know, we don't have any appointments. We don't think they have any appointments, but you could go there. And if you go there, they'll have to take care of you. And I'm like, that's pretty far away. You know, it's really far away. It's not in town. It's not in the next town. It's pretty freaking far. And I have this open wound in my arm. And I'm trying to explain to her, if I drive there, just the act of driving that far. And, you know, you have to use your arms for driving. Like, you don't realize how much you use your whole arms, you know, to drive and how you move them until you have an injury on an arm. And then it becomes obvious. And I'm thinking, I'm going to pop that open trying to get there. Like, even worse. This is not going to work, you know. And I ask, you know, does the doctor over there think that, you know, if I get there and it looks like it needs stitches, is that something she could do? And I can't get a confirmation, you know.
Right.
The doctor on the other end won't say anything to this poor call center person. I'm like, okay, never mind, right? And so I wait. And I know Monday, the Planned Parenthood here is open. And we called pretty early in the morning and explained what had happened. And they're like, well, we have an appointment at 9:50. And it was like, maybe it was 9 o'clock or something at the time. And I'm like, okay. You know, and I'm like, I'm going to try to get there. It's just down, you know, it's just in town. So I go. And we get there at like, I don't know, 9:45 or something, you know, and I fill out paperwork, even though I just filled out the paperwork the last time I was there, you know, like a week ago. And they get me in from the waiting room at 10 o'clock. And I'm like, that went great. You know, no problem.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you go in for Planned Parenthood, most of the time they collect a urine sample in case you're pregnant. You know, among other things. They didn't need to do it this time, but they did take my blood pressure again for whatever reason. It's like, I was here last week.
I think that's normal for blood pressure.
Yeah, you know, so they did that. And then the nurse that's with me says that, okay, well, we have to do an intake form and let's get on the computer and do that. And That was the problem last time, is their whole system's gotten computerized and they're not yet used to it. So even though I'd been there for the first time I got Implanon, they didn't have any record of me, and I had to like go through everything, and the script for that sucked. So there were certain things, like I'm 41, so a certain set of questions should have popped up then and didn't. So it was just kind of confusing, and I'm going, I don't want to go through all this again, you know? And she says, well, let me go see if there's a room. And she leaves me where they check your blood pressure. And she comes back after a little while and says, well, there's not a room, so I'm going to bring you into one of these education rooms over here, which is like, it's just a room where they can give you information about birth control or sterilization or whatever. Okay. They have, it's like where if you just want to know about something, this is where they can talk to you, but it has a computer. So she goes and looks at the computer and she asks me some questions and, straightens out a couple of things that weren't quite right. And, she says, okay, well, I'm going to leave you here for now and I'll be right back. I'm going to go find a room that's open and I should have you in there right away. No problem. And, you know, just stay here. Okay. An hour later, she has not come back, and I'm going, have I been forgotten about? You know, right. What's the deal? And she's closed the door to this little room. You could see these two rooms from where they take your blood pressure. You know, they don't put you into like a individual room for that. They just have an area they do this. And, you know, I'm like, they must know there's a door closed here, right? I mean, they must know I'm here, right? And I'm going, this is really kind of ridiculous. You know, how long am I going to wait? And I'm like, it's been an hour. How long could this, like, it's going to take 10 seconds for the doctor to look at this and say, yeah, it's fine. Or, oh no, here, have a bandage. You know, I mean, what's this, right? So I wait an hour. Now it's like 11 o'clock. And she comes back. She goes, okay, I've got a room for you now. I'm like, great. We go walking down the hall. She puts me in the room, says, okay, the doctor will be in here in a while. Leaves. okay. Uh-huh. Comes back in about 15 minutes later and asks me a couple more questions. She's like, yeah, the doctor wants to know this, that, and the other. They're not using the word doctor because I guess technically the person I see is not technically a doctor. It's right. I think I want to say RN, but I don't know if that's right.
Physician's assistant.
I don't, maybe something like that, you know, but I mean, to me, it's a doctor, you know, right. So that's how I think of it. And so she asked me a couple of questions and they had a couple of things that were input incorrectly. You know, she asked if I had kids. Oh, it says here you have kids. No, I don't have kids, you know? So they had to fix that. And I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. And now it's been like an hour and a half and I start calling Sean going, hey, you know,
yeah, well,
I'm still alive. I don't know why this is taking so long, but I'm in a room and I don't know how long I'm going to be sitting here.
Well, I just happened to actually be in the vicinity because the Planned Parenthood office here is essentially, it's in downtown San Luis, and I was going to be downtown for most of the day. Coincidentally, much later on in the day, it was the same day that I ran into Crazy Laura with the spare change.
Oh, so, right. Okay.
Anyway, but I was, part of the reason she was calling me is because I had said to you when, you know, because I walked you to the office.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, depending on what time you get done, you know, get, you know, give me a call if you feel like you want to eat or something, and mm-hmm. we'll try to meet back up. So anyway, go on.
Okay, so I'm telling Sean, hey, I'm still here. You know, they haven't even seen me yet. I'm in a room. I don't know how long I'll be. I don't know why I'm here. You know, and the other reason I was calling was to, you know, I was going to record a podcast with Nathan. We were going to record Halfway Around the World that day, and I didn't know how long I'd be in the doctor's office. So I was telling Sean, can you contact him and let him know so he's not waiting around for me if I can't make it, you know, from this. And so Sean relayed the messaging and that all worked out. But, and I'm sitting here waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and nothing happens. Right. And I'm like playing with my phone. I've got a flip phone. There ain't a lot I can do, you know, but I took a picture of BlizzCon of the Tyrael statue. I'm like, let's see if I can make that the wallpaper, you know, and I'm looking to see what else is sitting here in my phone. And it says I have maps and stuff I've never used. And I got a keychain out of my bag that had, you know, fallen off of my purse. And I'm trying to get that back on. I'm like, how long am I going to be here? You know, it's just like, I'm getting irritated. And then the nurse that was helping me comes back in for another question. You know, she comes in. I'm like, oh, good, it's the doctor. And it's not. And she sticks her head out and she's talking to who I'm referring to as the doctor. And she's like, okay, she's got a couple more questions. I'm like, okay, fine. And you know, I'm asking her, is this like a normal wait time? Because it's been like an hour 45 minutes or something like that, you know, at this point. And she said, well, yeah, sometimes, not always. I'm like, is it Mondays that the problem? Everyone comes in on a Monday, or, you know, what's the deal? And she goes, well, we did squeeze you in. And I said, yeah, and I'm trying to strategize for next time, you know, because I don't want to sit here this long. She knew how long I'd been there. And she said that some of the earlier appointments, this happens in every doctor's office everywhere. Some of the earlier appointments before I'd gotten in ran longer than anticipated, and it just threw off the whole day, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So waiting around. It's noon. I've been there 2 hours, a little more than 2 hours if you count, you know, when I got into the waiting room originally. And I'm just like, what do I do? You know, I'm looking around the room like, well, I think the bandages are over there. Maybe I could just replace them. I don't know. I mean, I have no idea, you know? And finally, the person I'm referring to as a doctor comes in, and, you know, I'm like, man, I have been here since, you know, and, she's, you know, very understanding about it. And, we do kind of strategize so I can not have this happen next time around. And she takes a look at my arm, and, you know, I told her what had happened, that it was still open and I don't know why it's open. And I don't know if I'm not healing or what's, you know, what's going on. And could you take a look at it? And she said that, well, part of what could be happening is that the device that they have to use, like, to put in the implanton, you make an incision in your arm, but to take it out, you have to make a larger incision. So I was actually trying to heal a larger incision than the first time, you know?
Yeah.
So that was part of the problem. And, you know, so she goes to look at it, and she goes, oh, did I put those bandages on? I'm like, did they do that here? And you know, she wanted to know. And I'm like, no, I put those on after I found it was a gaping wound. You gave me bandages, so I put them back on. She goes, oh, you did a really good job. I'm like, yay. You know, I mean, yeah. Okay. And she takes them off, and she looks at it, and she says, oh, no, this is healing really well. You know, this is where it should be. And, you know, I'm going to put more bandages on this, and, you know, give it 3 more days, and here's some more bandages you can take home, and all that. And I'm like, okay, so I'll just wait 3 more days, you know, to get that taken care of. And she's like, you did the right thing by coming in. That's exactly what you should do, because, you know, you never know if it might have gotten infected or anything else. And, you know, you did the right thing. And I'm like, okay, cool, you know, and put the bandages on. And part of the question she had with the nurse was the nurse didn't know how to put into the computer what I was in here for, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember the nurse saying, oh, so should I just put in that she's here for implanton? And the doctor's like, no, she's already done that. Don't book for that. And don't bill for that again. So, I mean, I don't know how they billed it, but I'm covered by Medicaid. So
hopefully, yeah,
we hope, you know, we'll see whenever that arrives. But so I got that taken care of. And then I waited 3 days and it was closed and it had formed a little scab. And now it's got a little, well, it's not really a scar, it's a discoloration. But the problem is that I kind of, you know, in my interest in making sure that this healed properly, I kind of didn't take into account that, oh yeah, I have an allergy to the adhesives on bandages, you know? So when I went to take the bandage off, it pulled off part of my skin a little bit away from this incision site. And that's trying to heal too, because it turns out, like, I knew my skin was itching. And I figured, well, maybe I'm healing. And it turns out I was having an allergic reaction. That you can end up peeling skin off. It's like eczema kind of thing. And so that's healing too now. But it was just kind of like the craziest thing, you know, to have happen that way. But so if you ever get implanton, when you go to take it out, you're going to have a larger wound than before. And it'll take longer to heal. Possibly. Maybe not. I mean, the doctor was telling me that most women that get this are in their 20s. You know?
Yeah.
It's something that younger women tend to favor. And, you know, I'm 41 and I want this. And I don't know, man. I thought maybe I didn't heal so well because of that. But I guess that's not it. It just had to do with you know, the larger incision site. So, yeah. Yay. You know? So I'm fine, but it took out my whole day, you know?
Yeah, it was one of those things where I think we were both thinking, okay, well, you'd be done with that in, you know, maybe an hour or so.
Well, it's all told by the time the doctor came in to look at it, and by the time she sent me out, it was like 10 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you were there, because I think you're, I'm trying to remember, because we called it about 9:15, I think.
Yeah, and they said the appointment was 9:50.
Yeah, they could get you in at 9:50.
And we got there.
So we were there at about 9:45. And I think we, you know, we eventually did meet up and have lunch at about 12:30-ish.
Probably.
So you were there for, you know, really about 3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. But they did get me in. No, I mean, yeah, I was annoyed. I was annoyed. I was irritated. I was getting stressed out from... It's hard to wait and not know how long you're waiting when you've got a wound in your arm, even though it's not, like, life-threatening. You know, all these things go through your head. Like, what, you know, how bad is this? And what are they going to do? And all that. And, you know, that was kind of stressful. And it just was exhausting to be there that long. And, you know, I was up earlier than typical to try to get in there. But they did get me in, and they did take care of what I needed. And there's a lot of doctor's offices that won't even try to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that. That's pretty good.
All right. So as I said earlier, you know, we're a few days now past Thanksgiving. And this year, Jen and I did something that we've really never done. I mean, in some ways, we've never done in all the years that we've been together. And that is the first, I mean, it's the first time since we moved to California that we decided to have just our own Thanksgiving, just the two of us.
Right. We've never done that. We've typically, since California, we would go to your sister's.
Right.
You know?
And before we moved, you know, for the 4 or so years where we were living together, you know, the 4 Thanksgivings we had before we moved, usually we would maybe, you know, the two of us, we might go to a buffet, have a meal, and then maybe swing by your parents' house
right,
for a little while.
Yeah, I'll just not go there.
And granted, arguably, I mean, we were still essentially sort of having Thanksgiving just the two of us, but not really, but...
Mm-hmm.
This year, just with everything going on, you know, I told my sister, look, I really appreciate it, but we're just going to kind of do our own thing this year, and we'll see what happens next year next
year. Right, but in addition to that, I want to say that, you know, we just had the nephew party we went to, guy's party, and your sister was saying that, you know, if I could come to that, you know,
that would
maybe,
be more important.
And maybe, you know, because I can't always, I get sick, you know.
Right.
And... you know, try to focus on that and not so much Thanksgiving. She would understand that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I got to the little kid party because that's a 5-year-old. So you got to do that, you know?
Right.
But she was going to essentially be okay with me opting out, which I think I did a previous year because I was really sick.
Yeah. Well, there have been a couple of Thanksgivings now where last year specifically, I just told my sister, I said, you know, Thanksgiving isn't really Jen's jam.
Well, it's just not her thing. I can't eat most of the food, you know, because everything has gluten in it or some other allergen. And it's just, there's something about Thanksgiving specifically where if you have food allergies, even the people in your family that kind of get that you have food allergies, you're going to get things like, well, you're going to have a little, right? Because it's Thanksgiving.
Right.
Well, no, I'm going to get sick. I ain't going to do it. And people just get, like, upset. You know, I'll put, like, tiny little amounts of food on my plate in case I have a reaction to anything, you know, to kind of prevent that from getting worse. And people, like, you know, typically people pile a lot of food on their plate for Thanksgiving. Then they look over at mine, and then they start feeling weird. And then they try to, like, get me to eat more, which I can't do, you know. And it's just kind of awkward and... you know, within seconds, I become the focus. And I'm sure this happens for other people with food allergies, too. And everybody wants to know, why can't you eat that or why not? And the thing this year is that, you know, we've had all these news articles saying, oh, well, unless you have celiac disease, gluten can't harm you. Well, that's nonsense. You know, that's complete and utter nonsense being passed around by people that do not understand food allergies. You know, so now I get to run into people going, oh, well, gluten can't hurt you. You don't have celiac. Well, let me tell you, it can. And here's my allergy testing to prove it, you know. And I just didn't feel like I had the energy based on, you know, everything else that had happened this month. I just didn't have the energy to possibly have somebody do that, you know.
Well,
and it's physically hard, like, for me to go to your sister's because... Yeah. You know, they have this wonderful yard full of flowers. They have these adorable dogs. There's like 5 of them, I think, now.
Yeah.
And they tend to get a real Christmas tree.
Right. Well, it's still a little early for the Christmas
tree. Sometimes it's a little early, but still, I mean, going there is physically a very toxic environment for me from an environmental allergy kind of standpoint. And then you add food and it's like, oh my God, this is not fun. You know?
Yeah.
This is not a fun experience at all. This is like a can I live through it experience. And it's just not my thing. You know?
Well, So this year we decided to just, you know, stay home, do our own Thanksgiving. And at first I thought, well, we'll just go to the buffet. And then I thought, well, what if we actually tried to have our own meal that we make ourselves?
Well, that you make, let's be honest here. Okay. I don't cook. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I asked you some things that you would like to have that you can't normally have because they're prepared in ways you can't eat.
Right.
And in reality, the only thing you asked for, I didn't actually get to cook. That was a casserole.
Right. Well, you already said you were making stuffing and I wanted that.
But too, I wanted to try to make a gluten-free stuffing. So I went online. I found a recipe that looked manageable. And also I asked about a dessert and we had kind of decided, well, we'll try to do a pumpkin pie. And again,
and we did have turkey too. We didn't say it.
Well, yeah, we bought a turkey breast, and because we live in amazing, wonderful times of the future, you know, one of the reasons that I've kind of held off on cooking Thanksgiving dinners in the past is that it always seemed like it was really difficult.
It can be.
And
if you're making a turkey.
At Target, we found this frozen turkey breast from freezer to oven. And I went, okay, I can handle that.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the turkey breast. We decided, or I said I would make the casserole.
And we're talking about the green bean casserole.
Yeah, green bean casserole.
And you would think, well, it's green beans. How come you can't eat that? Well, they add generally mushroom soup, you know, cream of mushroom soup, which has wheat in it, honestly. Yeah. And the little crunchy onions on the top are coated in wheat.
Right.
So that blows that, you know, totally cross-contaminated.
So I found a compatible recipe. And again, I figured, now this doesn't look impossible. And so, you know, Thanksgiving Day comes around. Although the night before, Wednesday night, I decided to try and make the pumpkin pie because I didn't want to try to cook that. You know, trying to cook that at the same time with the turkey seemed problematic. And I don't know how other people do their pumpkin pies, but personally, I don't really want mine to be warm. I think it's better cold and or at least at room temperature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
that's fine.
I figured I'll make it the night before. And really, when it comes to making a gluten-free pumpkin pie, the main thing that you need to figure out is the crust.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a recipe that included the pie filling and the crust. And in order to make the crust, you're supposed to do kind of the whole traditional pumpkin pie crust thing where you make your dough, you make it into the form, make it into a form of a disc, you roll it out with a rolling pin, you nice gently put it into a pan. And I don't have a rolling pin.
And we have a tiny kitchen.
But I thought maybe there was a way I could approximate that. And then after I made the dough, I thought, you know what? I bet I can just take the dough and just kind of, you know, mash it into the pan and just sort of make sure that I cover the entirety of the pan. And because sometimes when you're making pies, you need to do things like you want to bake the crust first and or maybe you want to, you know, bake it. Maybe you want to bake a pie 2 days from now, but you want to make the crust ahead of time, so you bake it a little bit first, and then there's all these other. And I
it can get
didn't
complex,
need to do
yeah.
any of that
right,
stuff.
Right. No.
So I took the dough and I kind of just mashed it into with my fingers the pie pan, and just kind of spread it around so it was, you know, equal and the whole thing was covered,
mm-hmm.
and then I, you know, made sure it was as flat as possible,
right.
and I thought, you know what, this will probably work just fine.
Right, and it's not too dissimilar from when you make lemon bars, you kind of make the crust sort of the same way.
Well, yeah, but with the lemon bars, when I make those...
It's a little different, but...
The dough for the crust, for lack of a better term, is a bit more liquid, so you just kind of pour it into the pan and let... This was different. This was actual dough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right, then it was
dough.
Different. See, I don't cook, so...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. You know, I made the pie filling, which was no problem, and put everything in the oven, you know, baked it till it was done, let it cool, put it in the refrigerator overnight.
And, And it looked so pretty, too.
It did look nice.
It looked pretty.
And it actually came out pretty good. Even the crust and everything. The big thing I was concerned about with the crust, because when you make stuff gluten-free, it tends to be flaky. And the thing that I was most concerned about is the crust was just going to kind of fall apart. But I think the process of cooling it overnight in the refrigerator allowed it to really solidify.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually came out pretty good. So that was good. But the everything else, you know, I made the stuffing and that was fine. We just bought some gluten-free bread from the store.
Mm-hmm. Which you can get. You know,
yeah, which is
get all the time. It's fine. You
know, yeah.
Yeah. And that's like the first time I've had stuffing in years, man.
Yeah. It's been a long time for me.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I did that. And time-wise, I had gotten done with that at about 20 minutes to when I was planning on taking the turkey breast out. And I knew I was going to need probably twice that long for the casserole. And I asked you, you know, look, are you really heartbroken about the casserole?
And I'd already started drinking, so I was okay.
Yeah,
that's
you were
fine.
Already wine, so
I'd already
fine.
Well, I had a bottle of wine that I got from a client last year as a Christmas bonus. You know, he sent two of them, and one is I sent to a friend. And so this one, I was like, okay, now's a good time for this. And so I started drinking, and I have these huge wine glasses, which work for me really well. And so by the time he came in, he's like, are you going to be upset if I don't do the green bean casserole? I'm like, well, we can make it another day. It's fine, you know?
Well, and one of the things in that recipe, because, again, they're trying to do, well, the point is to do it gluten-free. The recipe requires you to, instead of using a can of cream of mushroom soup, you actually kind of make your own mushroom sauce by actually, you know, cooking actual mushrooms, mm-hmm. which is fine.
Yeah.
But I knew, which I hadn't even started on, I knew that doing that and then baking it, this was going to throw everything off. So
right.
all
so
I did
it
was...
it was not that big a deal. You know, it was okay.
To keep the mushrooms from going to waste, I just took that and some other vegetables and sauteed them in a pan, and that
was
fine.
They were great. Mm-hmm.
And the turkey breast cooked perfectly. I couldn't have, I was kind of stunned by how easy that was, mm-hmm. and the fact that it came out so well.
Yeah.
And
it was in one of those bags, which tends to seal in the flavor a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I knew how to get it out of the bag, so that was cool.
Yeah, that helped.
Because I'd done that before somehow. But yeah, and it just, everything was great.
Yeah, it was a really nice...
Relaxing.
Just relaxing.
Allergy safe, you know.
We had probably our first meal in 5 years at our own kitchen table.
Well, yeah, because we're busy people, you know, or we're watching TV or
whatever.
But it just seemed like with Thanksgiving, you know, I felt like,
listen, if we're going to go to all this trouble to, you know, make all this food for us, I mean, it's a lot of food for two people.
Mm-hmm.
And,
we had some leftovers,
and
but not
kind of make this into a special thing. If we're going to each sit at our computers or at the couch and eat,
there was no way, not to do that.
But
so we just kind of did it that, you know, at the table. And, you know, I remember, you know, we tend to have conversations sort of like what you're hearing on this show all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, no matter if we're like sitting at, you know, eating dinner or if we're just sitting here at our computers or whatever. You just don't hear all of them, you know? It's kind of like this all the time.
Yeah.
And one of the things I remember you talking about is how, you know, up until, you know, when you had made the stuffing and had some, you know, it made you think about how before it would be just get a box of stuffing and make that, and how much better this was that you made, you know?
Well, and this is the thing that's surprised me, and I've been learning this a lot lately because I've been cooking more, but sort of starting from the point of, okay, what are things that I would go to the store and buy?
Right, like you've been making fried rice.
Fried rice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fried rice was one of the first things. But even beyond that, or what would I go out to a restaurant and buy? And then, okay, well, how hard is it to actually just make that myself? And what I'm discovering is, for a lot of these things, it's not that difficult. But the thing about stuffing... And again, I just thought, wow, this must be really complicated to make. And it's not. And I'll put a link to the particular recipe I used. I mean, I modified it a little bit, but this is all you do. You take bread, crumbs, and in this case, it was you know, pieces of bread. It was gluten-free bread. I toasted it, and then I broke it up into pieces. And you just take that and some butter, some vegetables, and some chicken broth, and you put it, you know, effectively you just put it in a pan. I mean, it's a little more involved than that, but
that's
not by much.
But that's kind of it, yeah.
And I just kind of went, well, wait a minute. If this is, if it's that easy to make this, then why would you just automatically assume that the only way to have that is out of a box?
Because that's the only way you've had that.
But that's because that's what we're accustomed to.
Yeah. And like, if you go, you know, if you're looking at the sales papers for grocery stores right around Thanksgiving, they're advertising, oh, here are boxes of stuffing, boxes of mashed potatoes. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that go, oh, that's what I need, you know, and that's what their parents did and their family does. So that's just what they do.
Yeah.
And that's true with a lot of foods. You just sort of follow through with what you've always done.
I've been listening to this podcast called Latest in Paleo. And yes, that is a reference to paleo diet and kind of that whole movement, which I'm not into by any stretch, but I'm interested in a lot of the philosophy around it. And when it comes to eating and food, at the very least, it's about getting closer to eating actual food, as opposed to stuff that you just, again, take out of a box. And
you know, that's been processed and that's had...
It's kind of fascinating to me when I think about how we eat and we do these things. And it was not all that long ago when you could just... When, you know, you would just make stuff. I mean, everybody just made things.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I have a potato salad recipe that my family has always made, you know, from scratch. It takes all day. But, you know, that's my concept of potato salad is what my grandmother used to make. But I think a lot of people, if they go to the deli and there it is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that kind of thing.
Yeah. So it just struck me in that way. And I've been thinking about it in a lot of ways. I mean, today we went to the store and got some groceries and came home, and I needed to eat. And as we were at the store, and I'm thinking, well, you know, we were at Target, and I was like, yeah, I could pick up a pizza and bring it home, because they have, you know, one of those little Pizza Hut things, which honestly aren't very good.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, I'll just go home and actually make some food. The one thing that was holding me back is we're at a point where most of the dishes I cook with needed to be washed, but I knew that I had one, you know, one clean pot that I could cook in, and I went, okay, well, that gives me actually two options then of things I can make. And I'd actually thought about this a couple days ago, because there's so many things that it's difficult for you with your food allergies to just go out and get.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, we should have tacos, because they're kind of stupid, dumb, easy to make.
They're simple, but the problem is that, you know, I'm never sure if the tortillas are actually corn, because we've had situations where, you know, a server or somewhere will say, oh yeah, it's corn, but it's not just corn, you know, but we found some from a fairly local place.
It's Mission Food.
Yeah, and they have corn tortillas that are like soft tortillas, and they say gluten-free. And you can't just put gluten-free on your product. You have to go through a process, you know. So they were safe, and they were good.
Yeah. So,
And the other thing...
Go ahead.
Okay. The other thing we were talking about, though, was like, okay, let's say I'm healthy. Let's say I was a healthy person with no food allergies ever, right? Would we have ever changed the way we eat? You know, because we were, you know, we grew up in the Midwest, not far from Chicago, where everything's breaded and fried, and, you know, deep dish pizza is the way to go and all that, you know, and, you know, stuffing from a box was the thing, right? And, you know, now the reason why aren't we doing stuffing from a box? Well, it's got gluten in it and I can't eat it. You know, he could still do it if he wanted, but it wouldn't be something I could eat. And it's kind of just, you know, I've had food allergies before that. It took a while. I mean, Sean knew me for for years before we finally figured out, okay, wait, gluten allergy, that's what this problem is.
Yeah.
So we were already working around certain allergens with foods anyway, but gluten just is in everything, and it just changes your world in a way that I can't even, like, all the foods you used to eat that are go-tos, you know, aren't anymore. You got to modify them, or you can't have them at all, you know, kind of thing. And it's really forced us to kind of change the way we eat. It's forced me. I mean, I can't just say one day, oh, I don't care about this, I'm going to just do what I want, because I'll get sick, you know?
Right.
It's not like a diet where people go off their diet because they want, you know, an ice cream sundae one day, you know, or something, and they can just go back, whatever, and be pretty much okay. Maybe they didn't lose as much weight that week, but they're basically fine. I can't do that. You know, I eat a little bit of something with some of these allergens in it, and some of my food allergens can kill me. So, you know, we had to make these changes, and it's really changed the way we eat. I mean, I can think back to when, you know, he and I first got together and we were eating like spaghetti a lot. And we were going to this pizza place that had a buffet with like tons of pizza and fried things and all that.
Rosati's.
And there was a, what was that? A Chinese restaurant with these giant egg rolls that were fried and, you know, had all kinds of things in them. And, you know, all this stuff that we used to eat that I can't and shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't connect the dots that I knew I had been diagnosed with wheat, rye and barley allergies. But at the time, I mean, this was, God, I was in high school. This was a long time ago. And the doctor at the time had not heard of celiac disease yet. So he kind of went, well, try not to eat a lot of those, and just sort of focused on my other food allergies and helped me avoid those things instead. And it took me a long time to finally go, wait, I can't eat that stuff. So I thought for years I was exhausted because everyone was exhausted. And I thought having your stomach hurt in a certain way after a meal was normal.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea. And it's just, things are so different now, but I can't help but think, like, the way we used to eat before we knew.
Right.
You know, like, we would have probably continued that way, and it wasn't necessarily healthy, you know?
Well, and I would say, I mean, in a certain way, because your food, you know, your food allergies, obviously, I don't have those.
Right. So you can eat whatever you want.
But what I've just come to, I mean, first of all, if we're going to cook a meal, it's kind of dumb to go, well, I'm going to make one gluten-free part of it and one not. It's just inefficient.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are times where we don't eat at the same time.
No.
You know, where we can just kind of do that. But
no. I mean, I'm sure within the last week, I've eaten things that you could not eat.
Right. Right.
And
I don't care.
And you know, you're not
them or anything.
This is not something where you kind of drew a line in the sand and went, you know, there will be never any more. I mean, I can still eat.
I don't care. I mean, I would never ever in my life try to force someone to live with as many food restrictions as I have to, because it's really difficult.
Yeah.
You know? So I mean, if you can eat, I don't care.
But, you know, for the most part, once you get used to it, having the gluten-free stuff is fine. I mean, I made us last night sandwiches.
Right.
On gluten-free bread.
Right.
And I
with
didn't
the turkey
sit there,
from Thanksgiving.
Right. And I didn't sit there and eat it and go, oh, this is horrible, I wish I had actual wheat bread.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was fine.
Now, it varies, though. Good. Some of the, you have to watch with gluten-free foods. Some are better than others.
Yeah.
And you'll find the ones you like. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in this case, like with, you know, the stuffing, it was fine. You know,
it was actually better. It was like light and fluffy and, you know, fresh.
It was kind of remarkable to me. And if I had made it, I mean, if I just made stuffing even without the gluten-free bread, if that wasn't an issue, it wasn't a concern, you know, it still would have come out that way. But it was striking to me because it had, I mean, it was made of actual ingredients. Like, it had actual vegetables
in it. Right, it had celery and, I think, onions.
Celeries and onion,
mm-hmm, yeah.
And whereas opposed to, you know, the stuff you get out of a box that's just a mix, you're just sort of, you know, adding water to it and maybe some butter. And you get those flavors,
but the texture's not the same,
It's
you know?
Not the same as actually tasting the things. And, like, tonight I made tacos, but it wasn't a taco mix, because no, those are unpredictable.
Right, you don't know what all's in those.
And I'm going to give you the secret. If you want to cook, just kind of, you know, if you're cooking food and you're using those, like the taco seasoning packets that you get at the store, you really don't need those because the secret weapon in all of those is cumin. If you have cumin and some pepper and some salt, really, unless you're going for a really authentic thing, in which case those seasoning packets aren't what you're doing anyway. If you have the cumin, the salt, and the pepper, that's all you need, and you can add more on top of that if you want. In my case, I used some chili powder, I used some garlic powder, and I had some onions left over from Thanksgiving, so I put those in as well.
Mm-hmm.
My point is to say, these things aren't complicated, and it's kind of been striking to me maybe over the last, I don't know, few months, where I've really been analyzing that and going, you know, for so much of my life, I kind of went, well, I can never make this and have it taste good because you need to have either whatever type of specialized equipment, or you need to have a, you know, you need to have certain skills or understanding of this or that. No, you don't. It's really not that complicated. Now, there are things that I would like to improve on, but I'm happy about living in this world where more often than not, I can look at things that we have. If it's, you know, 9 o'clock on a Sunday night and we are hungry enough to need more than snacks, we don't automatically, but we're not hungry enough where it's like, okay, let's get out the whole everything and make it a thing. And I'm happy to be in a place where under most circumstances I can go, okay, we got a little bit of this, we got a little bit of that. We can just turn that into a meal and it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So we had on our show notes a total of 4 items.
Yep.
At the top. And I think we're going to skip the last one because we're approaching an hour and a half and it's going to be a long one.
Yeah.
So why don't you read? We got a little bit of feedback to go over. Why don't you read that?
Okay. So we have a comment from Matt Sams who says, I didn't hear about someone dying in Waukegan.
Yeah. And that's a reference to right around Halloween. We had the news story about the guy who actually died in the haunted house.
Oh, right. Okay,
and that's so in Waukegan, which is in Matt's backyard.
So if he didn't hear about it, how much was that really talked about?
My thinking on that is, it, you know, if someone dies in an unusual way in Waukegan at this point, it's not newsworthy.
Oh, maybe that's it. Yeah,
to
it
everywhere else in the country, oh, sure, it's newsworthy. But there, it's just another day.
Maybe that's the thing, yeah.
Right.
And then he left another comment. And his second comment is, I'm happy to help anytime I can. And I don't know what that's in reference to.
Well, the clip show that we released while we were in BlizzCon, Matt actually provided some music beds for that.
Oh, okay. Now I understand. All right.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So let's finish off.
So we're going to not talk about the thing we've been not talking about for several shows.
And I promise, I feel like we've been, you know, not talking about it forever.
Well, I think the next show we could probably get to it unless all manner of weirdness occurs between now
right,
and then.
Exactly.
Yeah, which could happen, you know.
You know, all joking aside, if we decided to go into that now, this would turn into a 3-hour long show,
and
nobody
actually
wants that.
I don't think anybody wants that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's finish off with this. The San Jose Burger King restaurant was offering $100,000 in cash, but no one claimed the money. Now police are conducting a search for the owner. Atlef Chaus, the owner of the Burger King, left an abandoned backpack. Left an abandoned backpack next to the restaurant's cash register for 2 hours. When he opened the bag in search of some identification, he found 10 bundles of $10,000. Chow said he then called the police right away. I am Muslim and we believe that you have to sweat to get what you earn, Chow said. We say if you don't sweat, it's not your money. Chow came to the U.S. from India 26 years ago and then worked 3 jobs at once.
Oh, poor guy. I've done that.
Saving up to buy the Burger King, he said, Police searched the bag and found candy, a piece of paper with phone numbers, and a bag of marijuana in the backpack.
That's an odd combination of things.
The bag also contained a Wells Fargo withdrawal slip for a scant $300 that showed just $7.95 left in the account.
That's odd.
Though police are searching for the owner still, no one has come to Burger King to get the backpack, Chouse said. So I saw this and, you know, I thought about how, first off, I guess kudos to this guy for not just taking the money.
Well, I wouldn't take it either.
But
I don't want to be responsible for wherever that came from. Man. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Nobody has that kind of money for a good reason in a backpack.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's
somebody,
true.
That money is earmarked for somebody who's going to come looking, and I don't want to be who they come looking for. You know?
I don't know how much it's been, this has gone into the media, and if it's been identified what the actual Burger King is, because there's got to be many Burger Kings in the San Jose area.
Yeah, but, you know, I figure the guy that lost it, if he's still alive, he's probably going to come back to get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the thing is, I mean, okay, there was, what, marijuana in the bag?
Yeah.
Did they say it was a large quantity, or like...
They didn't specify.
Okay, so, I mean, I'm thinking if it was a ton of marijuana, he may be concerned if he goes to pick it up, he's going to get arrested for that. But if it's a small amount...
Yeah.
You know...
But now
was,
that...
What state was this in?
It was in California.
Okay, so they've limited, you know, if you have a small amount, the amount of...
you could, if that was your bag, and you really weren't engaging in anything truly illegal, you could potentially, under some kind of interpretation of the medical marijuana law, get away with the medical marijuana.
Maybe, but that doesn't explain the amount of money that's in that bag.
Yeah.
You know, and the receipt didn't explain where it came from, so it's a pretty rare occurrence for somebody to have that amount of money.
Right.
You know, just kind of in a backpack.
But
I mean, that's a little odd.
Well, yeah, and the thing that makes me wonder...
And if he's already gone to the bank and it didn't pull it from that account, it wasn't like he was transferring accounts or something, you know? I mean, so where did this come from?
Well,
whose is it?
I have to guess that with whatever media coverage this thing has gotten, the fact that he's gone to the police is probably going to keep a certain number of people away who are just going to, you know, show up and kind of go, hey, man, where's my backpack? I saw in the news that you have my backpack handed
over,
or else.
That could happen,
And if the police are involved, I don't know, but I have to assume that the police probably have custody of the bag.
Well, that's how that works when you turn something in that someone has lost. I mean,
which is the safest way to handle something like that, because then if somebody comes in, you can go, here's the police who have it. You can go to them. You can talk to them. It's out of my hands.
And right.
I've
And now that it's been reported, whoever's looking for that money knows the guy at the Burger King don't have it no more.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've heard before, and I don't know if this is true, but that if you do report or turn in, you know, a large amount of money like that that's just been found, if it sits unclaimed for a certain period of time, then you can make some kind of claim on it.
But that's only if it's not connected to something else.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, if they have reason to believe that this is connected to something else in some way, then it becomes evidence.
Then it's evidence and it's completely lost.
Right.
But it is one of those things that you always think about, you know, if you just find a backpack with a shit ton of money in it, you know, what do you do? Like, what do you... You kind of gauge, okay, I've got this money, and I think the thing that I always figure will happen if it was me is it would turn out that money was supposed to, like, it was part of a criminal investigation. The bills are all earmarked,
right.
And as soon as I put one into the bank,
you get arrested for having it, yeah.
Cops are at my door.
See, I'd be thinking another scenario. You know, it's maybe it's not earmarked yet, and somebody has collected it by nefarious means, and they're going to come to your door instead.
Well,
I don't want
that.
No way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, all right. Well, I think that's enough of this, unless you got anything else you want to add.
No, I think we're good, except for the thing that we'll save for next time.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to our program. Hypernonsense.com is our web. We'd love you to go there and leave some comments. We will read them on the show. You can go to hypernonsense.com/iTunes. Or if you're listening in the Apple Podcasts app on your mobile device, from right in there, you could leave us a review. Doesn't matter what it is, 1 to 5 stars. Pick what you think we're worth, and we'll read that on the show as well, even if it's a 1-star review. Now, that doesn't mean that if you love the show, you should just go and leave a 1-star review because you want to be the special one.
That would make you the special one, but not necessarily in a good way.
You can go to hypernonsense.com/subscribe. You can see all the ways, including iTunes, that you can listen to the show, including Stitcher. Unlike my new friend, Norm Pattis, we are not currently at war with Stitcher.
We have no war with them, no.
So you can find us there, as well as TuneIn and Spreaker, as well as our RSS feed, which you can plug into any pod aggregator that handles RSS. You can email us show@hypernonsense.com. I recently changed how I handle all of my email because that address was just getting shitloads of spam. But if you're not a spam bot, your message should get through to us, and we'll also read that on the show if applicable. You can follow us on Twitter @hypernonsense. So thank you for listening, and with any luck, we'll be back with you next week.
Bye, people.